Welcome to 60 Second Classics with Mike Camerlingo. Now, this is a show about movies and TV shows and sports. And that time, a guy ate a bunch of Mentos before going into a job interview. Sorry, sir, you have a lot of paint on your suit. Good day. There's tons of throwback stuff, but if you like newer stuff, that's also mixed in as well. Now, this is based on a video series I created with the same name, so head on over to 60secondclassics.com if you want to watch voiceovers from some of your favorite clips from yesteryear. Is yesteryear a word? I don't know. I'm kind of a dumbass, and that is the point. This podcast is not going to make you smarter. It's a time suck. It's a good thing to listen to at the gym while you're doing a little buys and tries, you know, a little hammer curls. But you're not going to bring it up in a dinner party and say, guess what I learned while listening to 60 Second Classics. You're not going to do it. But that's okay. Because as a gym teacher once told me, not everybody can dunk, my man. Not everybody can dunk. And once you learn that, then you start throwing some bounce passes. And that's what this podcast is. It's a goddamn bounce pass. Today I have a great guest and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. No, you know what? That's not confident enough. I need to go full Men's Warehouse. You will like it. Or I will give you a free suit. I sat down with Kyle Brandt, host of the NFL Network's Good Morning Football, and we talked about basically everything. We talked about taking a hot dog shit at the beach. We talked about auditioning for commercials, that time he was on The Real World, and if Pokeye legend Al Bundy would really thrive in a pro-style offense. I personally think he would use all that disappointment in his life to just fucking run dudes over. But he may get into trouble when he tweets after the game. You're going to need a PR person to say, oh, he didn't. Big old Al didn't mean that. At one point in the podcast, we referenced Kyle's shirt. It is a Bloodsport t-shirt. It's awesome. I'll put a picture up on socials. Do you guys have socials? Twitter is at mcamerlingo. Pretty easy name to close out a tab at a crowded bar. Instagram is at 60 Second Classics. TikTok is at 60 Second Classics. You're thinking, Mike, you're too old to be on TikTok. I fucking know, man. I know. We also talk about Rocky III a little bit. It's the 40th anniversary of that glorious beach scene when two men get all lathered up and jump around in some salt water. And that's what friendship is. Don't let anyone tell you that's not friendship. That is male friendship. So I've set up a voicemail for the show. It's 617-340-9481. Give a call. Ask a question. Give a statement. Whatever you want to do. If it's good, I'll play it on the show. And that'll be fun. That's called interactive. How do you engage with your audience? Make it interactive. That's what somebody on LinkedIn told me once. Before we get to the interview with Kyle, I need to talk about something a little bit serious. It's time for a PSA for everyone who's a little bit washed up. And you're thinking, I'm not washed up, Mike. I just ran 3 miles. You're washed up. You're listening to this podcast. Your ass is washed. Okay? So listen up. This summer, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to do something that you may consider fun. But I want you to think long and hard if your old ass body can handle it. I'm talking about cannonballs into a pool, jumping up and touching a street sign, trying to race your nephew at his birthday party. Sure, yeah, maybe you beat little old Keith in his dumbass braces. And maybe even one of the moms is looking at you and you're like, what up, Barbara? But in that moment, your hamstring is plotting revenge. And when you wake up the next day, it's gonna feel like you got hit in the glutes with a goddamn bazooka. Don't do it. I'm telling you, don't do it. You're going to be at a barbecue and someone's going to say, hey man, go deep. Do not, under any circumstances, go deep. You're going to step on a Coke bottle that's been buried in the ground since the Vietnam War, and that means ankle surgery for you. And now you got to call your ex-girlfriend to pick you up, even though she's happily married to a man who owns several kayaks. Kayaks, bitches, you can't compete with that. When you're washed up, you just don't have the ligaments you used to. Sure, it wasn't a big deal when you were crushing Gatorades and playing Ken Griffey Jr. baseball on Nintendo 64, but now your body's saying no mas. No mas. You're thinking, I can still do it. Your brain is playing a trick on you. It thinks it can still fly like Benny the Jet, but trust me, it cannot. So do not attempt to Tony the Tiger a frisbee at the beach. That's a ball bag disaster. Do not try an ollie on your cousin's skateboard. What, do you want to have a retirement party for your wrist? Do not belly flop into a lake. A nipple rupture at your age? That's just downright embarrassing. So now you're thinking, Mike, I can't do anything this summer. What am I supposed to do? I'll tell you what you do. You sit back, you chug a 24-ounce fountain soda filled with Bud Heavy, and you say, hey, any of you fuckers see that documentary on PBS about aliens? It was exquisite. You can thank me later. And now if any of you guys get hurt, my hands are clean. I did my service. And now let's go to the interview with Kyle Brandt. All right, joining us on the show today, I'm very happy to have this guy. He is the host of NFL Network's Good Morning Football, the host of 10 Questions with Kyle Brandt. which you can listen to on Spotify. Mm-hmm. He has a solid jawline, the legend of the pump-up speech, and he's retweeted 1 to 2 of my videos, which makes him automatically my best friend because I'm a sicko. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle Brandt. Kyle, welcome.
Mike, I'm trying to remember the moment. I'm trying to remember the moment where I was like, oh, this guy's awesome. And I've as I sat down and I'm connecting the goddamn Zoom and audio, and I narrowed it down to 2 finalists. It's either the breakdown of the video from Sudden Death with Van Damme versus Icebergs, either that, or
really,
I think it was during the Mike Piazza Baywatch breakdown. And I think is when you referred to a beach bathroom and referred to someone taking a hot dog shit. And that was when I had a legitimate spit take as I was drinking coffee or something. And it was a farcical slapstick comedy spit take with a full spray out of my mouth into the phrase hot dog shit. Because if you know, you know, Mike, you know what that term means.
I mean, who hasn't been at the beach and you see the hot dog stand and you go, yeah, let me get it. You know what? Let me get 2. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And yep. Then before you know it, you're trying to kick down the door because you got to get one of those Nathans out. So I appreciate that. Some of these videos, someone's like, dude, is everything okay? Like I'm like, no, it's fine. It's all, we've all been there.
It's awesome. Yeah. I follow your stuff. I love your stuff. And, you know, I was telling you before we came on, Mike, we like the same things. Like we are, this is going to be fun. This is my pleasure to be here, but thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, a lot of the segments when you guys are doing stuff on Good Morning Football, I'm like, oh, that's a great like prompt. That's a great question. Like, I like that. Yeah, so really, yeah, that's, you do awesome on that show and I love watching it. So thanks for coming on and thank you for appreciating hot dog shit. I think anybody who watches my videos or listens to my stuff appreciates potty humor. Sure. But I think it's elevated shit humor. That's how I think of it.
You know, I got into a debate once and you should weigh in on this. I remember I was once talking to the all-time writer, Jeff Perlman, mm-hmm. who has written all these novels and all these great sports books. And right now that book, that show about the Lakers on HBO is based on his book. And we were debating, what is the most disgusting species of bathroom? Like, you can go down the line and, you know, like an airplane bathroom after a 6-hour flight, or like just your standard porta potty. And I have to tell you, back to this, I came out on beach bathroom. If like the lead block of the argument is that it's often barefoot, almost always.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you have flip-flops, but it's usually barefoot. And for some reason, there's almost always a vagrant. There's no doors. I've seen some disgusting ones in California. So I went with that. What comes to mind for you, Mike?
Well, I like the bathroom selection because no one's in there taking a clean shit and gone. There's never any soap. There's no soap. So there's always kind of, you know, those are sandy shits. A sandy shit is not where you want to be.
I think that's true.
A bus bathroom could get dangerous. I think an airplane bathroom is fine because something about the hum makes it okay. But like a Greyhound bus, like a New York to Boston, stuck in traffic 6 hours. People are, look, they stop at Arby's and then everyone gets their Arby's and they get back on the bus. And then they're not pulling over again. So people are going back there and they're taking what they call roast beef shits. So you don't want to be near the toilet when you get a roast beef shit. And during like COVID and shit, I'm like, oh dude, you get it in the bathroom. Don't go in there.
You definitely kick it up in the bathroom on every surface. I'm not going to pose this question. This will be for our next conversation because it's getting too gross too fast and it's your podcast, but there is a power ranking to be done about which fast food chain produces the most disgusting bathroom trips, and like if you were to power rank them, because you mentioned Arby's, and like Arby's has to be way up there. It's just that volume of that weird like gelatin meat that they make,
and it's like people, if your body's not used to it, right? So it's like people who are like, oh, what's Arby's? Let's try Arby's. Bam.
Yeah.
You just ate a giant roast beef and your body cannot handle it. Versus like McDonald's, like everyone's body is used to McDonald's now. It's in the water, you know? So if you eat a Big Mac, you're like, yeah, you know, you might be kind of slumped over to the side, but everyone can handle a Big Mac shit.
So, it's kind of like when you have little kids and they tell them, you know, it's expose them to getting sick. They should get cold. They should get those things. Then they learn to deal with it. I would just say expose your system to Arby's if you're a fast food type of a guy. Then you learn to deal with it.
I didn't think about that. My daughter, we gave her a couple of McDonald's fries the first time last weekend. She's 1 and she obviously loved them. And I was kind of like, oh, this isn't good. But you know what? You're building up her McDonald's immune system.
Yes.
This is good.
And God bless you for not being one of these 2022 parents, of which I have some of my own family, who are just like, you know, we don't eat fried foods. I'm raising them right. It's going to be all vegetables and clean proteins. And like, God bless them. But just that hasn't happened in my house. Like we did it 1980s style, man.
Yeah. Mama Celeste pizzas, baby. Kyle, if the pandemic taught us anything, it's that life's short. So, you know, mix it up a little. You got to mix up. Yeah, I agree. God bless if you can stick to that. But I think you should maybe pitch this to Good Morning Football. Power ranking shit places where you take a big dump.
Well, I think you would have to do it with, we have to have some sort of even like an approach to a football tied to it. So it would either have to be like, what stadium would you want to do it in or least want to do it in? Or you could get back to, instead of the fast foods that would provide the worst bathroom trip, you could do, what regional cuisine? Is it the Ravens crab cakes? Is it the Chiefs barbecue? Like, dude,
you're such a pro, right, dude. Now.
It's all in play. We could all do it. We could actually do this. There's nothing else going on.
All right. I want a consulting producer credit on that.
You got it. You got it, Cameron Lango.
Thank you. I just brought Kyle on to pump me up, and then I'm going to just, you know.
Well, dude, I mean, I can do that for an hour. Like, when I'm like, yeah, sometimes you'll drop one, and I'll be like, God damn it, that son of a bitch did the snake punching scene from Hard Target. He did it. Like, I know that scene from start to finish and every beat of it. Listen, not even that. I say this at least once a year. Like, someone would have a tradition where they see a family member once a year, or they light a candle or have a special bottle of scotch. Once a year, I sit myself down and I make sure the kids are asleep and I make sure I'm at perfect quiet. And I watch the bar scene from Out for Justice. And it is, I think it's like, I honestly am not making a farcical, like satirical joke about Steven Seagal. I think it's my favorite scene in movie history. And you could have the taking of the beach in, you know, Saving Private Ryan, and you could have the tracking shot in Goodfellas. I love them all. Something about that scene where he goes from person to person, punching them, and then the cue ball and all that stuff. I think it's just, I'm so happy about the whole scene. And I just want to know if anybody knows why Richie did Bobby Lupo. And I love this. So I watched. And so when you did that breakdown, I was like, let's go.
I mean, it's beautifully done. Growing up, I was always more of a Jean-Claude Van Damme head, as I call myself. But I mean, I have respect for Seagal. Oh, nice. Dude, I didn't even realize you were wearing that.
See that perm up there? I wore this for you today.
That's awesome, one. Dude. That's awesome. So, but
you were saying a Van Damme versus Seagal thing, like, let's get into this. And you came out on the Jean-Claude side.
Yeah. Although isn't Van Damme like not like Steven Seagal would say Van Damme's full of shit, right? Like, he doesn't really know his stuff.
There's a lot of takes on that. Yeah.
Well, anyway, for whatever reason, I grew up in a Van Damme household. I've probably seen the movie Lionheart like 20 times. That was just always on when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a deep cut, but it's a semi deep, like it's a little bit lower. Like, that last fight with Attila, mm-hmm. I think about it all the time. The guy in the stands who kind of looks like Troy Aikman. Mm-hmm. I was a Van Damme guy, and I've seen Seagal movies. But if you like pointed a gun at me and was like, dude, what do you know about Seagal? I'd be like, he's got a ponytail.
Yep.
He runs like T-1000, got hit by a car. Like, he runs fucking real weird. And that scene in Out for Justice.
Lionheart, it's such a great point that you brought that up. Because when most people go to the Jean-Claude catalog, it's Bloodsport, I think, is just known as the Jean-Claude GOAT. And then Kickboxer, which is a little bit like kind of like dollar store Bloodsport. It still really delivers, and I like it. And then you get into all the other shit. I've always thought that Lionheart is that perfect Van Damme sweet spot where, like, he's kind of playing a character, and it's a little embarrassing, but he still goes for it. And the fight scenes, you mentioned the one at the end. There's that one that's in like an empty swimming pool, which is unbelievable, in like 1 foot of water. Yeah. That's my favorite one. I love Lionheart.
So I brought, just not to tie it back to my videos, but I did a video where I broke down all 6 fights of Lionheart probably now we're really getting into the niche territory. Like, I went through every fight and I looked at them and I just, because I love that movie. So the pool one always stuck out for me. But so I probably went back and rewatched that movie 2 years ago. And what I forgot about it is it's like, it's really emo. It's emo as hell. He's walking through the streets and there's like that slow jazz horn, and he has this guilt and stuff. So it's just, I didn't remember that obviously when I was a kid. I probably just zoned out.
The fight scenes.
Yeah, just fast forward to the fight scenes. But I was watching it as an adult, just like half laughing, half feeling like, this is insane. But
isn't there a moment, to your point, where Jean-Claude is at some sort of lunch counter, like eating a burrito, and it's like he's so sad and like his shoulders are all humped and the burrito looks pathetic and he's like barely taking bites? I feel like Jean-Claude was like working that scene. And he like worked with a coach and like he did his Meisner technique and like he had had that burrito, like that burrito meant something to him. I just like, he really was going for it as an actor in that movie. And I just kind of respect it.
I do wonder if he's someone who like would use an acting coach, or to me, for whatever reason, I feel like he just shows up to set and is like, I'm going to do it this way. And they can't tell him no.
It's possible with those guys. I have a connection slightly adjacent to that. I used to, for 3.5 years, I was on Days of Our Lives.
Yes, I do want to talk about this. Thank you for bringing it up.
No, but I'm going to bring it to our action heroes thing too. So think 03 to 06. I'm in my early to mid 20s. I got a job on NBC's Days of Our Lives playing Philip Kyriakos, son of Victor. Oh, this is a great character. And, you know, I got to do that for 3.5 years. I got to go to work, be on NBC, none of this like, you know, Peacock shit, like NBC proper, Channel 4. And it was just awesome, awesome. But they had the resource for like dialogue coaches, mm-hmm. acting coaches. So, like, when you're in your dressing room before you go do your scenes, there's a woman there who like, maybe you should try to go like, and I remember the woman they had at the time, I don't remember her name, but she, this was like her side gig, and her regular gig, she, I'm not making this up, she was the acting coach for Walker, Texas Ranger, and she worked with Chuck. So she was his personal coach, where she would be in the trailer with Chuck in the high waisted and the cowboy hat and the boots and like work through that dialogue with him. And so that's the person that Days of Our Lives brought in to work with us. And I was like, this, you're Angelo Dundee, like you're the greatest trainer of all time. I cannot believe we're talking. And like, she would tell stories about Chuck, and to your point about Van Damme, she'd be like, you know, Chuck would have his own ideas sometimes about the scene, but you know, you try to work him, but you respect him. Are you kidding me? He's just there to kick some guys in the head and like get the hell out of there and take a check. But I know that lady, and she said Chuck sometimes, to your point about Van Damme, sometimes the artist needs to be the artist. You just have to let them breathe.
What I always heard about soaps was that you'd have like 100 pages a week or something. Like, mm-hmm. didn't you just get a stack of papers at the beginning of the week?
Yes. Yeah. You're spot on. I have a great gift, I guess, for memorizing dialogue, just like I would memorize stupid movie lines.
Right.
Like as a kid, I could memorize like the whole speech in The Princess Bride about like, clearly I cannot take the wine in front of me. Like I used to be able to do that whole thing, or the thing that Rick Moranis does in Spaceballs where he's like, goes with the traveler. He will come in one of the pre-chosen forms during the rectification of the Voldrani. All that's, I used to know that stuff. So when they would give me a whole page of me, if Philip just pouring his heart out about why he loved Belle so much, I can memorize it pretty quickly. But dude, you'd have people come in there who looked like a $1 billion, the most beautiful person you've ever seen, body like a Greek god, talented actors too. Like they just got off the bus in LA and they're gonna become movie stars. They could not memorize one sentence, and they would have a take and another take, and then you gotta let them go. Like we can't have someone here unless you can rip off a 3-minute monologue that you learned in 5 minutes. And so it was like, the soap world is ruthless, man.
Yeah, even if you were able to memorize, like if you were someone who struggled with that, which I'm sure a lot of people did, it would probably take away from your acting. Like the worst place you want to be when you're acting is like in your head, obviously.
Oh, the worst. The worst. I remember when Eminem did 8 Mile, and everyone's like, wow, like he kind of pulled it off. Like he was good. Like who knew? And he had this quote that I think I'm paraphrasing it, but like the elitist actor community, I don't think looked friendly on it. And Eminem says something like, yeah, you know, acting is like, it's mostly just learning the lines. And then after you learn the lines, it's pretty easy. So it's just what you're saying, that some people just like, God damn, those lines are really bothering me. And once you get them, you can stick the landing.
I kind of get what Eminem's saying. Like most people, I know actors wouldn't, but most people are playing some version of themselves, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you weren't Philip. You weren't like, you know, you were doing something, but you were still had the essence of Kyle.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a knock. That's I feel like that's a compliment to people who can take what they have that's charismatic and that people want to look at and to put it on camera. That's what I always say. I was in a couple commercials. No big deal, Kyle.
What commercials were you in? Let's hear it.
I was in a commercial for Fox Sports One where a baby shot out of the woman. She was giving birth, a baby shot out of the woman, and Gus Johnson and Bill Rafferty catch it. And it was kind of funny. The guy from the guy who created We Are the Millers. What's that movie? What's the other movie? Dodgeball. He directed it.
Yeah, I know that. I know that guy.
Rawson Thurber. Shout out Rawson. I'm going to have you on the podcast. I'll probably cut this right, so because I don't want you to be mad at me.
Rawson, take the shot. This is crazy, though. I was also in a commercial directed by Rawson Thurber.
Really?
Yeah, and it was for right guard, and it starred Randy Johnson while he was still pitching, and it was in a gym in the Valley, and he threw dodgeballs at Jim Brewer and me and a couple other guys, and Rawson Thurber, like, that was, it was a dodgeball commercial before Dodgeball the movie. So really? It like played a role. Like Rawson Thurber was to dodgeball movies what Scorsese was to like Italian crime dramas. He ran the dodgeball circuit.
Now I wonder if he saw that and he's like, this is it. This is what's like the movie right here. Wow. So you know what's funny is like when you watch that, you're like, hey Rawson, could have used a call for dodgeball. Like you saw me in that commercial, dude.
I know. And I thought we clicked too. Here's an interesting, like people listening doing that know. Commercial auditioning is soulless and thankless and very difficult.
I wrote it down right here. Does auditioning for commercials take your soul? It's brutal, dude. It's brutal.
Yeah. And the difference is if you audition to have a few lines on some primetime drama, you go in and it's a proper process where you sit there with three or four other guys who look like you in a waiting room. You go in, there's usually a pretty friendly, helpful casting director and you read your lines and they try to help you and they really are rooting for you most of the time. A commercial audition for a, you know, Bud Light commercial, there's 70 guys and they walk into this disgusting, depressed little like pseudo kind of mall looking thing or some sort of shitty office. And you walk in and they just look at you and they could be like, no, no, no. Yeah. Or like I used to audition for like Gillette commercials, like shaving cream.
You have to take your shirt off and shave your chest.
No, I don't even shave my chest. But I remember walking in and this male casting director, he just goes, all right. Take your shirt off. Take your shirt off. And I was like, all right. And then he was looking at me. It's like, it's just a commercial auditioning. But all these people you see on all these beer commercials and stuff, they went through hell to get there.
I always think about that. Or I always say that annoyingly when I'm watching them, you know, when you watch a terrible commercial, I'm like, see that woman. She had to beat out 85 people for that. Like she was the best one. Or they thought she was the best one. I mean, the commercials I booked were always ones where you could like improvise, where you could like, because I could be funny in the room, but ones where there were kind of semi-serious or the worst ones I remember that are still in my soul, which were like ones for like Applebee's or Chili's or like a casino where, you know, you've seen those commercials where it's mostly voiceover and they show like a group of friends like gambling and high-fiving. Mm-hmm. So you'd go into a casting office and they'd pair you up with like five or six people and they tell you to look nice. So you're like wearing this stupid ass collared shirt. It's fucking 90 degrees in August in New York City. You take three trains to get there. They're of course running late. And then you get in there and they're like, all right, guys, act like you just ordered something at Applebee's. Yep. And everyone's like, yeah. And I would always try to have one kind of semi like, hey, this is fucking stupid joke. Like just to kind of break the tension. Yep. I'm like, yeah. What are we doing after this? Hopefully getting drunk. You know, like, and I would never book those jobs, obviously, but it left you feeling, and a lot of those gigs, like respect to anybody who books them, but those are most of these that you're auditioning for, you go, I don't even want this job. Like you're just doing it because it's obviously a nice paycheck for the most part. So yeah, that was tough.
It is rough. I didn't know we'd be talking about the commercial audition thing, but I mean, you do every time you walk in, you're like, I think I'm going to get this. And like, if you get the commercial, you know, maybe you make like $20,000, like they pay well if they run a network. So like, it's kind of a huge deal. And you're like, this is the shirt. This is my closing shirt.
Right.
This blue thing. It's going to make me pop. They're going to like it. You don't get it.
Yeah. What a business. So now I do voiceovers for Twitter for free. So shout out to everybody. Follows me. Did you, I wanted to talk about this.
Okay.
You tweeted it like a couple months ago. You're an extra on A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
Can you tell me did you do a lot of extra work or is that the only time you did it?
No, I did a little bit to get my SAG card. I was an extra. Once I moved to LA, I was an extra on Scrubs. Like Zach Braff was unbelievably cool. And I was an extra on like a dog shit Bruce Willis movie called Tears of the Sun.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah, it came and went really. Antoine Fuqua was hot after Training Day and he directed that and just didn't go anywhere. But the story with A Beautiful Mind is unbelievably cool. So I'm in college, my senior year. I'm at Princeton, and I remember it vividly. If you look up the timeline, Gladiator is the biggest movie in the world by far. It's the biggest movie of the year. It wins Best Picture. Russell Crowe is at the Oscars. A superstar is born, one of the greatest roles ever played, and just a 100% badass legend, incredible. He's at the Oscars. The next day, not a week later, the next day, I am sitting in my like little apartment on campus at Princeton, looking out the window, and there's Russell Crowe shooting scenes for A Beautiful Mind. He got on a plane from the Oscars, came back, and was shooting A Beautiful Mind directly on campus as I was a real-life student there. And it was just an unbelievable thing where they had to barricade off these courtyards. And I was a senior. So like it was second semester senior. I was just like getting drunk and like not going to class really. And like just hanging out. We would just watch Russell Crowe shoot these scenes. And then the real like Wonka golden ticket of it all was they made this announcement that we are looking to use Princeton students as extras playing Princeton students in 19, whatever it was.
They're like, who's the most jack motherfucker here? You're like, yeah, what's up?
Sort of. I mean, like, I hung out with a lot of football players. So I got cast as an extra. Unfortunately, we had to drive down to New Jersey because I got cast to be in the bar scene. If you know that movie really well, there's a scene where he is at the bar and he tries to pick up on this really attractive blonde by just saying, hey, let's have some fluid exchange. And she slaps him. And then Paul Bettany has like a line. So I got to go be in that experience in the bar. Now, understand. I walk on set. I've never been on any kind of set like this before. I'm wearing a sweater letter jacket that is time period. You know, it's just ridiculous. I have side parted hair. They left no stone unturned because they said it in the makeup department. They're like, we have a feeling that we can win Best Picture with this movie. So everything is very thorough. They gave us special haircuts and everything. You walk out on the set.
Sorry, did you want to be an actor at the time? Like, was that in your? Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah, okay. Like I'd been doing plays and like Real World hadn't happened yet. So like, I'm like, this is a dream for me. Cause you walk out there, like there's Ron Howard and he's talking it over with Russell Crowe. Again, Russell Crowe, massive global superstar at the time. And there he is sitting at the bar going with Ron Howard. And there's Paul Bettany, who I didn't know. And then Josh Lucas, who I knew from American Psycho, is over there. And this is where the story goes. Very nerve-wracking set, like in the sense I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. When you're an extra in bar scenes, you don't talk, you mime talking because they don't want to have any audio.
Apples and oranges, apples and oranges.
All dead silent except for Russell Crowe. So I'm not making this up, Mike. They do a take, she slaps him, she walks out. Second take, she's in the middle of the dialogue and my fucking phone rings in my pocket. And now I had a Nokia flip phone. This is spring of 2001. And I was told explicitly, no phones on set, no phones on set. This is right when everyone was starting to have a phone. And this stage manager woman ran over to me and she wanted to like screwdriver my eyeballs. She was so mad. And I remember I looked up and Russell Crowe just looks down like that. Paul Bettany kind of laughed. And the best part is that Ron Howard walked over. And he was like, Hey man, what's going on? Did you mess up that take? You know, it's like goofy, dopey Ron Howard. And I go, yeah, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. He's like, hey, it's okay. It's all right. Don't worry about it. How you doing? What's your name? I'm Ron. The nicest person I've ever met in my life. You take the phone out. I didn't get fired or kicked out. They just took the phone. I got to go. And then he goes right back to Crow. It's like, all right, let's do it again. Want to do it again? When you feel like you want to do another one? He was like Opie incarnate. And it was an amazing, I'll never forget that moment when he said, I'm Ron, you know, he could have
just sick.
Yeah,
you're the only extra that probably met him. So that it's good that your phone went off.
I'm actually glad that it did. I'm glad that my old college girlfriend called me to said, when are you coming home? Because I got to meet Ron Howard.
I have one experience where I attempted to be an extra. I was in New York. I was probably, I don't know, 24 or something. I was doing a lot of I was doing anything I could. But I was doing like open mics and stuff, stand-up stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw, I'm pretty sure it was on Craigslist, to be an extra for the TV show Gossip Girl.
Sure.
Remember Gossip Girl? Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So it was one of those things where, you know, extras don't get the best treatment. You kind of have to be there the longest. So it was one of those things where I show up to set at like 6:30, wear a suit, because this is high society type stuff, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's a little different than at a big feature film where they're giving you a haircut or something. They're like, wear a suit. So I'm like walking down Fifth Ave in a ill-fitting, blazer and slacks that I probably got from TJ Maxx. to wear to a funeral in high school or something, you know? So I show up, I'm waiting. They put you in holding with all the other extras and everyone's just sitting there. Everybody in there is just sitting there, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So I'm like, I'm starting to go, wait a sec. I'm doing a show tonight. And me doing a show, I mean, I didn't sell out Caroline's. It's like, I have a show where I probably had to bring a couple people. That's scam where you're like, we'll give you stage time.
Sure.
So I'm like, I don't think I'm going to make it. My show is at 7 o'clock. It's now 1 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah.
They go, we're breaking for lunch. We haven't been used yet. I'm still over there sweating through my shit. So we go, we're breaking for lunch. It's right. You go outside. They have this whole setup right there. So I go, okay. So we go and I'm walking to lunch. As I'm walking to lunch, I go, you know what? I'm leaving. So I start to walk a little faster. I don't even get the lunch. And I just fucking speed walk down Fifth Avenue. And I get probably back to my apartment at 2 o'clock. And it was so, let me tell you, it was a thrill when I was running away from set. It was a thrill. I was so thrilled. So now I say I was almost on Gossip Girl, almost. But
you did like a dine and ditch kind of.
But
there
was,
know?
But I didn't get the benefit of food. I just showed up. I sat there for 7 hours and then I ran down Fifth Avenue and probably bombed that night in front of my friends.
Yeah. Do you think you had material that night in your set from the day's activities?
I probably tried.
It's tough to turn that around.
Then I just like probably bailed on it and went back to
whatever. How much do you think, did you get paid for the Gossip Girl extra job?
No, I fucking bailed.
You didn't get the check.
I didn't get the $105 or $110 or whatever it was at the time. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I guess being an extra, it's a tough gig. It's a tough gig.
Unbelievable.
It is a good way to get your SAG card and get some health insurance.
Yeah, you probably should have stayed, Mike, you know, to be honest. It's pretty disrespectful of the production to just leave.
I imagine them looking around being like, where's that one guy? Well, are we going to, you know, I know. That was, if I ever have a chance to make it up to that casting director. Real quick, we don't have to talk about it too much, but what was your audition like for The Real World? What'd you have to do?
First of all, we can talk about it as much as you want.
Well, you know what's funny, Kyle, is like,
yeah,
I obviously know you from Good Morning Football, but I feel like you're in there somewhere. You have that familiar thing. And I'm like, I'm sure it's because I watched The Real World.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like,
you have a familiar vibe. That's a good thing. I feel like that's a compliment when someone's like,
I hope so. And I'll take it. Yeah. But I also like people always have this little entry point of apologizing before they ask me about Real World. I will never be loath to talk about it. I'm always a pleasure to do it. It's a really bizarre, interesting thing for people our age that I did that. Yeah. So I'll always talk about it.
Oh, my bad. You know what? I shouldn't have. I did kind of like be like, oh,
no, you're being really polite. And I totally know where you're coming from because it's like, you know, asking someone about like a hit single they had like 30 years ago. Like, ugh, enough of that. No, I'm not like that though.
The difference is you're still making music though. It's not like you're, you know what I mean? You're not doing
I got a new album, Mike. Check it out.
Well, you know what it is? It's like, it's kind of like going to the moon. Only so many people have done it. So it's now there's more and more, but you're in Real World Chicago, which was, I don't know, it was the 10th one. I tried to look it up last night. Somewhere
11, and it aired in 2001. So right when I got out of college.
So you were going in, you knew, you go, I know what The Real World is. You knew what it was. You've seen
it. Oh, dude.
It was the biggest
show on campus. Yeah. Like this is after, you know, the Seattle season with the Irene slap and Steven and all that. It was when I started watching. And that was massive, the Lyme disease and all that crazy thing.
Do you know, to this day, when I hear Lyme disease, I always think of Irene. Irene, right? Yeah.
Irene, yeah.
I'll be like Irene from The Real World. People are like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No, she did. And did you see, Mike, that I don't think it was fake. I think it was authentic. After the Will Smith, Chris Rock slap, Irene tweeted something pithy about slaps and like something about like famous slaps. Cause it was like the biggest slap kind of probably since then.
Yeah.
And I think it was really her. It was her picture. And they had like countless retweets. So she like got in a line 25 years later about slaps. And I was kind of proud of her. But you asked about the audition. It was a magical time. And that sounds so corny, but what I mean is, I think probably 2 weeks after Russell Crowe was on campus in spring of 2001, randomly, the MTV came and did an open call at Princeton University. It wasn't like I submitted a video. And if I had to like drive to Rutgers, I wouldn't have gone,
right,
but it was a block away. It was a block away from where I slept at night. So I went, and you know, for a long time, I used to say, I've talked about this for such a long time now. I used to say, yeah, some friends and I went, you know, for laughs. And that was a lie. I didn't go with any friends. I went by myself.
Yeah.
And I went with myself because I wanted to get it. And I wanted to get the job and the job. And then you wait in this long ass line, and we went into like a microbrew. And I remember this was so 2001. They were like pushing the envelope, and it was kind of considered a risky question. They asked you these interview questions that, like, you know, trying to throw you or see how you react. And they were like, all right, so if a gay man hit on you, how would you feel about that?
Right.
And like, I was, and I said something like, well, you know, it's happened twice today already, and I really enjoyed it. It's some stupid, like, smart ass answer. And they laughed, and then, you know, circled my name. It's all right, next. And then they just, it was call back and all that. And then I got cast in my hometown of Chicago.
Yeah, that's cool. Hometown. Yeah, they probably circle you. They're like, okay. And then they wait till someone has a negative response to that answer. And they're like, okay, we're going to put them in too.
Double circle on him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't know. Yeah. You know what it was always funny about those shows, and you can tell me obviously better, is when my brain exploded when I learned that you don't, like, you couldn't have a phone. You couldn't have, like, you were cut off, right? Weren't you just kind of
correct?
I mean, they fed you booze probably, right?
Yeah, I think there was a little booze around, but like most people didn't. Like I said, we were just getting like flip phones, so right, they take those away. There's no TV. There was like basic internet, I think, with like a crappy iMac computer, like one of those ones with like the neon orange backing, and I remember that. But that was it, and like, you know, it gets all heavy and terrible, but the only time we were allowed to have a TV was we were there for 9/11.
Oh.
So that was the only time in the show ever in its history that they brought in a television so he could just sit there and watch the news and like be shocked like everybody else. That was fucked up.
Yeah. Did you ever think about doing any of the challenge type stuff?
No. After I was done with that experience, I was like really messed up, man. Like I was 4 months of it, and I was really, I had a lot of anxiety.
Messed up from being on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After just doing, you shoot it for 4 months, and like I lost a bunch of weight, like in a bad way, you know, and like I just was, I had a lot of anxiety and like very insecure. It was a rough experience. And so then they're like, so what do you say? You want to run it forward? Let's do it again. You want to go down to Cabo and like try to compete for a wave runner? And I was just like, no, I'm out. Plus, Mike, and this will, you'll like this, is like, I was going to become a thespian at that point. Like, I was distancing myself from this tomfoolery over here.
Yeah.
And I was going to be doing Shakespeare in the Park. So at that time in 2001, it was like shit was blowing up. This is... Yeah. Bachelor's massive, Survivor's massive, Joe Millionaire, all that shit is everywhere. And they were all flooding Hollywood. And so like I would go in meetings and they'd be like, oh, one of these reality show douchebags, like next.
Right.
So like I had to get away from that challenge thing as fast as possible. But I do regret it sometimes.
I mean, I don't know, man. You facing off against CT and Johnny Bananas, what a rivalry.
Yeah, I don't know if I want any piece of either of those guys.
Those guys are beasts, man.
You know why? Because then I'll be getting, you know, then Mike Camerlengo will be doing a video breakdown of me getting backpacked. And like, I'm not going to have that.
You know what? I gotta find that Right Guard commercial and check
it
out.
It's on YouTube. It is. It's funny.
Well, our guy Rawson directed it. I'm sure it is funny.
Yeah, it's a really cool commercial. Dude. Yeah, really cool.
Shout out. Congratulations, by the way, on being able to announce the Buffalo Bills pick. That's fucking awesome.
It was a life memory. Unbelievably cool. You got to see the backstage at that thing. It's just this bizarre Comic-Con wax museum, like Wonderland back there. Like if you just step right off stage before I announce the Bills pick, you get Donny Osmond, Wayne Newton, Emmett Smith, Roger Goodell, Barry Sanders. And they're all standing there having the world's most awkward conversation because they don't have a ton in common other than like Barry and Emmett. And like, there's this crowd and they got this card in their hand. They're trying to figure out how to pronounce this poor kid's name. And then it's very electric back there.
Yeah.
The cast of characters is some sort of trip. It's really weird.
Well, that's awesome. I did something equally as awesome. I thought of where actors would go in the draft from TV shows and movies, like that are in football movies. So I'm going to run through real quick, and I want your NFL expertise. Sure. You're on an NFL show.
Yeah.
I know you've thought about this stuff before.
Of course I have.
I'm going to go first up. Where does, Varsity Blues quarterback John Moxon, what do you think about him? Is he a good prospect?
It's a heady player, and he's a good teammate, a little bit resistant to coaching and thinks he knows more than the coach. Not a high-end elite talent. We loved Lance Harbor before he went out with those knee problems. So yeah. It's kind of like settling for the second quarterback on the team. Like they say Matt Cassel never started at USC a game because he was always behind Larnett and Carson Palmer. So I see Moxon as sort of a Matt Cassel type who is a dutiful backup, but not necessarily the long-term answer as a starter. And I love Matt. I know him personally. That's my comp for Johnny Moxon, Matt Cassel.
Yeah, I had, Moxon, he's good. He's smart. He'll memorize the playbook, but he may not call the play. Like, it doesn't, he's going to be anti-coach. Yeah. So he may get into a fist fight with your coach.
The sports police have to intervene in that movie several times, of course. But the part that I will just not abide by is there's no high school player who is sitting on the sideline with his playbook with a Vonnegut book inside the play. No, out fucking rageous. That would never, ever happen. And it was some stupid thing a screenwriter thought would be interesting. But like, it breaks all realms of possibility that would ever happen. Never is never.
Oh, come on, Kyle. It shows that he's not into football, man. He's into going to, where's he going to, Brown? He doesn't
yeah,
want
yeah. you. Yeah, I think he went to Brown, yeah.
Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Voight, I mean...
God y'all have fun. Hope you had fun.
That's probably one of the more quotable movies that I use. Anytime, if you wake up with a hangover, you give the old hope it was fun.
Hope y'all it was have fun. Yeah. Y'all have a good time.
What about Charlie Tweeter? Same movie, wide receiver played by Scott Kahn.
Scott Kahn.
Good hands. I have him as good hands, good route runner. May miss games due to STD infections or something.
I go right to the medical card. That's a cut up. That's a guy guys want to go to battle with. He's a fun guy in the locker room, fun guy in the road trips, but undersized. I think Scott Kahn is strikingly diminutive, if I'm not wrong.
Well, if he uses hair, that's why he's got that big poof. He's got the poof.
It's
dude.
True. That's like his afro, like it gets him up to like 5'6". I think he's really short. I think he makes like Wes Welker look like Calvin Johnson. So probably an undrafted guy, maybe one of those guys who plays in that weird league that Johnny Manziel's playing in now.
Yeah. All right. Steeman Willie Beeman from Any Given Sunday.
Now we're talking.
I did great footwork. He's a great scrambler, can make any throw, but I don't know. Maybe he'll be too popular on social media. I feel like he'll be live streaming in the locker room. Maybe that's a knock on him. I don't know.
Well, his problem with social media is also going to be the continued gifts of him vomiting on the field. And like that ain't going to be easy to live down. Like, Donovan McNabb still has to hear about that. And we don't even have real great backstory or high definition proof of it. Multiple times, Beeman vomits through his face mask, under his face mask. So in these days, like that would happen. And then someone on like some debate show would like scream that he's not a big time player, doesn't have the clutch gene. I can't trust this guy in the big moment. And there'd be other people who would jump in and say, help me with what the heck is the fucking guy's name? The Dennis Quaid character. Give me him. He's a winner. Yeah. He's someone I can count winner. On.
Yeah.
It would be on.
Oh man. Puking through your helmet. I don't think I've ever done that. I think I've always managed to take the helmet off back in my glory days.
Mike, what are we talking about? What level of football are we talking about?
Varsity football, high school. But
what position?
Nope, I played quarterback.
You did?
I broke my arm in half senior year of high school. First game, dude. I got a metal plate in my arm right now.
Oh,
yeah.
That sucks.
For you. That was when I was like, all right, maybe I don't need to play. Because I was thinking about playing, not D1. My dad's Italian. Let's cut
some
it.
Some kind of college ball?
Some kind of college ball. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm all right.
Can you still chuck it around, Mike?
Hell yeah, dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my non-throwing arm. So.
Okay. Wow.
No big deal. Well, you played in college, though.
Yeah, but I wasn't a quarterback.
Well, I didn't puke in the huddle.
Either. And I definitely puked through my face mask a few times. The real ninjas in terms of excreting shit from your face through your face mask was like, there were guys who would like farmer snot, like with one nostril, and they would blow it right through their face mask bars.
And then occasionally
it would catch on like a spider web, just absolutely filthy. Some big fat lineman who would do that. I remember him well. This is gross.
speaking of living in the past, Al Bundy, where do you see Al Bundy going in the draft?
Well,
four touchdowns.
I'm trying to think about who the coach was at Polk High, you know, and if he would be someone who would look out for his players and who would try to talk to the college coaches, because Bundy never even got to the college level.
Yeah.
So it is fascinating that people like to point out that he had like a 4-bedroom house and was a shoe salesman. So beautiful suburban house provided for his family, just selling shoes. I don't know if that works in 2022.
The American dream in the late 80s.
I know.
You know,
just this sexy wife and these kids fighting each other and just selling shoes and making fat jokes at women who come in there like that. Those clips are rough to watch now.
I was on an airplane, no big deal, not to brag. And I was watching Married with Children, and I was dying laughing, but also being like, oh my God, I can't believe this is on TV like this. I wasn't dying laughing at that part. Okay, let's relax.
No, I remember learning about stuff from Married with Children, like just, There's a scene where they're going to go upstairs and like have sex and like,
oh, yeah.
I didn't even know what they were talking about, but I remember Bundy's just like, hey, I'll go get the wild turkey and I'll meet you up there in 5 minutes. And I remember asking my mom, like, what is wild turkey?
Yeah.
She's just like, don't worry about it. It's adult humor. And I don't know. It sounds cool. I want some.
Horniest TV couple of all time was Frank Lambert and I forget the wife's name in Step by Step.
I don't know
if you ever watched Step by
Suzanne
Step.
Summers?
Suzanne Summers, but I forget her character.
And Patrick
name.
Duffy.
Patrick Duffy. Well, they would make so many horned up jokes. And I was just like, all right, guys, I was like 11. I was like, all right, guys, I get it. Let's let's focus on the step by step. Like, let's,
yeah, one step at a time, folks.
Yeah. They'd be like, let's get these kids out of the house so we can go upstairs. And they'd be massaging her. I'd be like, Patrick Duffy.
Easy.
Jesus, dude.
I know. She looked great, though. Damn.
Oh,
so did he.
Two good-looking people.
Yeah, great-looking people. I'm in.
All right, dude. I got a whole list of these, but I want to talk about one more thing before we leave.
All right.
It's the 40th anniversary of the movie Rocky III.
Yeah.
Ever hear of it?
Yeah.
I recently rewatched. First of all, the trailer. I just watched it. It says it's Rocky's greatest challenge to save his honor, his marriage, and his manhood. Was his marriage in danger? I know Adrian was basically calling him a puss, but. I feel like they were okay.
Yeah, I got a lot of takes on Adrian from day one. I've not been a fan of hers. I really haven't. And if you go back to Rocky I, and if you really look at the time frame, she is out on him and out on him and out on him. And when the Creed Balboa fight is announced, in the next scene, she is snuggling him on the couch. So I'm telling you, you can track it. I think the woman's motivations are highly, highly questionable. Of course, coming to a peak in Rocky IV at the top of the stairs of her fucking mansion that she lives in, screaming down that he can't do it. So we've had some troubles over the years, myself and Adrian.
As I was watching the Rocky III, I said, is this the movie where Rocky maybe gets the most mashed potato brain? Like, he gets destroyed in this movie.
I know.
Mr. T, Clubber Lang, is just teeing off on him. And I know Ivan Drago kicks his ass too, but something about the way Mr. T is like crow hopping and just delivering punches into his temple. I'm like, dude, no way you'd be dead. And it made me think, why do they get rid of the Mr. T character? Like, I want to see Mr. T. I want to see Clubber Lang fight Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
I want to see the fight. And I love, look, shit. Rocky's got to come back and win, but it's just weird that he kind of exits the universe for good. He's such a good character. I'm sure Mr. T would have been willing to uppercut him again.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge that they had is that Mr. T was so good and Clubber Lang was so evil and so strong. They're like, how are we going to top this?
Right.
We just got to go to roided up Soviets. That's the only thing we can possibly do. And they found like the perfect human specimen. So to their great credit, they did top it
from three to four.
It's just amazing how that happened. And I wonder what you're saying about the mashed potato brain and like how badly, what is the worst beating that he takes? It always leads me to this idea that like, I'll just ask you, like, he's a legend and an icon. Is Rocky Balboa the worst boxer to ever live?
He's real bad.
Has no idea how to box.
He's a fourth quarter team. Let's just say that. He comes out and he doesn't throw a punch, or he throws a couple. He doesn't block. He doesn't like shed a punch.
The
he
sweet just, science. Like none of
just
it.
Just gets destroyed. Is Rocky a bad boxer? Most likely.
Yeah.
Is Mickey a bad trainer? You bet your ass. RIP. But he's not teaching him what he needs to know. He has him chasing chickens around, which is great. He's punching meat, which is great.
Yep.
But he's not studying film. He doesn't know how to slip the jab, even though they say it in the movie. He just runs in a punch. He eats punches.
I know.
You ever see someone just eat a punch and you go, ooh, ooh, that wasn't good. Rocky does that. I had like 10 beers one night and I watched the beginning of Rocky IV. Well, when he fights Drago.
Yeah.
He, to my counting, I did it real quick. He gets punched 82 times in the first round.
Okay.
I was going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 82 times in the first round by Ivan Drago, a man who just killed another person on live TV. And the ref doesn't think to stop the fight. Like if this person just killed a man on live TV, don't you think they'd be like, hey, watch it. Let's stop it. Instead, Christmas Day, they let him go.
I think the KGB had their hands on that fight and it was unsanctioned by their rules and they wanted him to die. Never forget too, that Apollo Creed was killed in a fight that was an exhibition that had nothing to do with anything. And Rocky Balboa decided to fight Drago for no money.
For free. He could have used that money for, you know, Apollo's widow, like maybe for his funeral. He could have thrown some money, but he's like, no, I don't want money.
And what happens?
He should have an agent. Does he have an agent?
I don't think he does have an agent.
Rocky Five. He's like, oh, I don't have any money. It's like,
he's broke.
Well, what happened before?
What about the Drago fight? Yeah. It is crazy to see how bad he is and how terrible a trainer he is. But the saving grace of Rocky Three, the greatest trainer of all time, is apparently Apollo Creed, because he gets Rocky to drop like 9/10 off his 40 time from just working out much. And like, he goes from Tom Brady to Tyreek Hill, just basically running on the beach. I don't know how that's possible, but he can beat Apollo in the end.
And if you watch that tape back, which I've done a million times, I know you did a thing for a Good Morning Football with it, right?
Yeah. I was Rocky. Nate was Apollo.
You watch it, you can watch and you see Carl Weathers just like, he's just slowing up and I'm
downshifted.
Rocky has what I call a bowling ball ass head in this movie. I think it's his haircut, but he looks like he has a basketball or a pumpkin on top of shoulders, but he's absolutely shredded. He is on a hydroxycut diet. He is ripped to high hell. So I get it that he's in shape, and Rocky IV too. He's in great bodies, great thigh work in Rocky III. But
he's got
a lot
that
of
solo flex body, right? Remember the solo flex?
Oh, yeah.
He's got the solo flex of hydroxy cut.
The thing about when they like flash back to show that he has like brain damage or whatever, they always show Drago punching him and stuff. Yep. I'm like, no, it's the collection of punches. It's, you got punched 900 times in each movie we've seen. And that's just the movie we've seen. Like, think of him in like a street fight in Philly.
No.
He probably got hit 70 times with a trash can and he's like, oh, let me get in there. So what a franchise.
And they're still making them. I like that when he goes to Siberia to train for the Drago fight, and he's there for like weeks in Siberia and in Siberia and the snow and cold, and then the second he shows up to the ring, he takes off his robe, he's got this deep orange tan that somehow, I don't know how the hell he got in Siberia, but he is tanned to the bejesus and looks great.
I mean, that soundtrack, Rocky IV soundtrack, to this day, if I'm like, oh, I should go for a run, maybe you throw that on to get you going. Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
My God. Yeah. And I'm like,
because people are like, oh, I love the Rocky IV training montage. Hold up, dumbass. There's one, you get a 2-minute intermission for Adrian to come by and kiss his ass, and then right back into another one, Hearts on Fire.
They're almost back to back. It's so close together that, Adrian gets off the plane. You know why Adrian gets off the plane? Because they're like, Rocky's, he's ripped. I think he might win. And, you know, she's, to your theory, she's just showing up.
Yeah, I think the credit cards got denied, and so she had to come by.
I love it. I've never heard this disdain for Adrian before, and I love it. It's so good.
Starts from the top of the stairs, and this man who has built this entire career and erected this home and bought for Ferraris based on facing people telling him things he can't do and defying those odds. And here in this moment, his own wife is saying, you can't win you know, as she's sitting in her 50,000 thread count sheets. And like, I think that Adrian, and again, look back, she doesn't snuggle up to him until he gets the fight. And until then, wants nothing to do with him.
Did Adrian and the robot have sex when Rocky was in Russia? They might have. She liked Polly's robot.
You know, maybe that explains the whole thing. But
did you hear that robot is like from John Taffer? That he there's like some story behind it with John Taffer, and I don't really know.
I didn't hear the Taffer connection. No,
he was running, or he owned a bar, maybe in Philly or somewhere, and they had that robot in the bar. Now, if you're listening to this and you go, "That's not true," you know what? It sounded true in my head, so I'm just gonna go with it. But it's some kind of thing like that. So that's what I like to do. I like to go, "Hey, did you guys hear about this?" And I hoped that you go, "Yeah." But if someone goes, "No, tell me more about it," I go, "Well, you know, some people are saying inflation, you know." So
no, I don't know about the Taffer thing, Mike. Tell me more.
I know. Please no. I could obviously talk Rocky all day, and I could talk the real world all day. But we're going to do one more segment before I let you go. You've been very gracious with your time.
Sure, man.
I love it. Since this show is 60-second classics, I'm going to do a speed round. The goal is to answer as many questions as you can. It doesn't matter if they're right or not. So you just got to give me an answer in 60 seconds, all right?
Yep.
I need a name for this, by the way. So if someone listening, pitch me a name. Speed bag, that's not really it, but something like that. So you go a speed bag with Kyle Brandt. Again, that's not it.
That's what's going to happen to me now. All right, speed bag me, Mike.
You're going to get speed bagged.
Nice.
All right, 60-second speed round with Kyle Brandt starting now. In the United States, the compilation album, now that's what I call music, has how many volumes?
I'd say about 75.
It's 82. Who's a better softball player, George Costanza or Jerry Seinfeld?
Costanza.
What state was on McLovin's license in the movie Superbad?
Hawaii.
If you're playing Contra on Nintendo and you hit up, up, down, down, left, right, left,
30
right.
30 lives.
Have you ever put someone in a headlock and said, "Take it back, take it back"?
No, but I've given them a noogie.
Hell yeah. And this is this sentence, "Hey, babe, want to see a kickflip?" Is that a good pickup line?
No, it sounds like Ray Jackson from Bloodsport. It's not good.
Who's the coolest football player in the 90s?
Dion.
How much does Robin Williams' character bench in Good Will Hunting?
280.
285. Have you ever worn Axe body spray?
I have not worn Axe body spray, but I used to have a tap out shirt.
Do you remember the opening credits of Baywatch when the lifeguard dives into the wave? If you do, how fucking cool is that?
Yes, I do. I remember every image.
Boom. That is 60 seconds. That is it.
Oh, man. That was so fun.
If I could read, that would have went much quicker.
You know what? That segment was crazy, Mike. It was like it went up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right. It was just nuts. It was crazy.
Clip it, folks. Clip it. Holy hell, dude. You know what's stuff when you can't read and you go, "Who wrote this?" And you go, I wrote this.
Fucking great.
Oh, dude. Well, honestly, thank you so much for coming on.
Of course.
I had an awesome time. It's great to chat with you. I'm a big fan. I love watching your stuff. And if you ever get that fast food kind of pooping segment on air,
yes,
hit me up. I'll pitch you some ideas.
I promise you I will. I mean this. I'm dead serious. I love your stuff. I watch them all. I obviously, based on the numbers that you dropped earlier, I need to retweet more of them. And Mike, I got your message loud and clear. Don't worry. I got you. I'll be on that.
That's what I do. I bring people on and I say, "You need to retweet this shit because I need the dopamine." All right, Kyle Brandt. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Mike, awesome job. Anytime.
All right, guys, that is the show. I hope you enjoyed my interview with Kyle Brandt. If there are people you want me to talk to, hit me up on Twitter at mcamerlingo. You can also hit me up on Instagram at 60secondclassics. Again, leave me a voicemail, 617-340-9481. Also, go to 60secondclassics.com. If you want to sponsor this show, hit me up, baby. Hit me up. Letters on the menu. Okay, peace.